my name is Anna Dushinsky, and welcome to this next of our series of recovery stories. I'm here with Natasha Todd. I've actually known Natasha for about 12 years, we figured out, didn't we? As Natasha was one of my clients and then went on to do the training course and has had her own successful practice for around 7 years. So today Natasha's here to share her own journey, her recovery journey from chronic fatigue and the insights and learnings that she gained through that process. So welcome and thank you. So should we start with the point at which, it's a funny point to start, I guess, but I know for a lot of people, there is a build-up, but they only realise retrospectively how long that build-up has often been for them. So I often start with people at the point where you crashed, I guess, where you suddenly realised that something had to change. So what was going on for you at that point?
So at the point of my crash, I had three young boys who were aged 4, 6 and 8, which in itself was quite stressful. I was also working in an American city law firm 2 days a week as a guinea pig for part time for them. And it didn't work. They clearly couldn't manage part time. So I was under a lot of stress there. My husband had lost his job, so I very much felt like I had to go out to work. And I absolutely hated my job because I was sort of having, it felt like I was doing 300 hours work in 100 hours each week, plus having to be perfect mum and come home, make meals, put my children to bed, start working again. And I basically just burnt myself out completely. So I remember walking with the boys one day in the park and just realizing I couldn't actually get myself back to the car.
Right.
And right. Ringing my mum and saying, can you come and take my boys away? I can't do any more. And that was the crash. From then on, I was in bed.
Okay. So it went very quickly, very severely to you really could do very little. You were basically in bed for really quite a few months, weren't you?
Yes, I think completely bed bound, probably for 3 months, I would say, but for about 8 months, I wasn't able to be in my own home looking after my own children.
Yeah. And you've already, I guess, picked up on a couple of key themes that you'll know we hear a lot from people who come to the clinic. One of them is just the pushing, the trying to do it all, really. You were doing a part-time job that wasn't a part-time job. Trying to be that word perfect sticks out, right? Trying to be the perfect mum. So tell me about that. What did that mean to you to be the perfect mum?
So everything had to be done 100% for me. So even if I was working very hard, I had to put the right meal on the table for the children. And I wanted to be there. I wanted to be the one bringing them up. So I was kind of always on catch up from those 2 days that I was working and needed to give them my time, my energy, my thoughts, my worries. You know, I was just wanting to be there 100% for them, getting it right, whatever that looked like. And I felt the same at work. The work failure was not something I could contemplate at all. So when I was at work, I was also struggling to get it right and get it perfect. So it was just, it didn't matter what I was doing, that pressure was there.
The pressure was there. And if you look back kind of retrospectively, obviously that was the point where everything fell apart and you had to make change. With hindsight, was there a build up to that point? Without you necessarily having recognized it?
Yes, I would say that probably ever since I went away to boarding school when I was 12, and I was very homesick, I was very shy, I was sensitive, and I had to cope and sort of grow up overnight. And I think that's when that strategy started of just, okay, if I work really hard and I achieve and I get it right and I'm perfect, that kind of feels safe. I can cope if I do that. So I think at that point, I really kind of used my brain and my head and my intellect. And that was from where I kind of lived my life. And that was the start of pushing, needing to succeed. And it was probably, honestly, a build up from then all the way through to age 40 without realizing it. It was just, you know, a bit more and a bit more and a bit more of that kind of pattern going on.
And how had that played out for you then? You know, that pushing and achieving, obviously to some degree, you know, you'd kind of done well, you'd become a lawyer, you'd got the job. So, and that's the funny thing about these patterns, isn't it? It works to a degree, right? There is a level to which it does give us what we're trying to get. It does meet the need. What had been the fallout from that prior? Because as I say, it tends not to be a point where, you know, we suddenly crash and nothing had led up to it. What had been the fallout from that pattern for you then over the years, do you feel?
I felt before that crash more and more that I was overwhelmed. So emotionally, I wasn't coping. I was very stressed. My relationship with my husband was under strain. And I was kind of giving myself a hard time as well. So it was, I almost went into more overdrive. And I just became more and more exhausted and more feeling like I was a bit out of control.
Okay. But out of control, exhausted, overwhelmed, and it sounds like the world around you, your world was suffering from that, your emotional world, but even the relationships, you know, your close relationships were struggling or were suffering as a result of that.
Yeah, definitely.
So the point at which you crashed, and obviously you had to make change, how did you cope with that, and what were the kind of stages of going from that crash point to the beginnings of real recovery?
So in terms of kind of physically what the illness looked like, do you mean?
Partly that, yeah, absolutely. And then what were the kind of steps that took you towards?
So I think to start with, the beginning of the crash, I ended up in bed. I was staying in my parents' house. Actually, it was total relief, because someone had taken away all the worry, all the pressure, all the stress, and this job I hated, I couldn't do anymore. So to start with, the illness was a lovely excuse to kind of get out of this horror I was in. So so I think I thought I had a virus, and I was told it would take 6 weeks. So I rested for 6 weeks and thought, I'm going to get better. And then, of course, at the end of the 6 weeks, I wasn't better at all. So that's when I got the diagnosis, or I went to a diagnostic consultant, and he put me on amitriptylin, which he promised me would sort of sort it out. You just take a little bit more each week, and then there's this magic moment where your energy comes back. So I tried that, and it was very helpful in some ways, because I started sleeping again, which I hadn't been doing. So I could get up at a normal time of day or start my day. And I had a little bit more structure to the day. But I kind of went up to a certain dosage and started coming back down again. And this miracle never happened. So sort of 6-7 months later, I decided that was not the route I wanted to take. I was really into nutrition, and this just didn't feel right, being on these drugs. And so that led me to kind of looking for the next piece. And that's where I found the 90-day program at the OHC. And I guess when I met you. And I think the start of that 90-day program was a real turning point for me, because it was the first time that I had ever kind of heard of the concept of there kind of being another way of looking at life. You know, the fact that I had choice, that I didn't have to be pushing myself all the time, or it just that kind of that we have the ability to maybe see it in a different way, which could feel different. And that was pretty mind blowing for me, because it was just like someone was talking another language to start with. but I was really intrigued. And as I started learning the tools and doing the course, it really felt right. Just the kind of doing the nutrition side, the psychology side, just felt right for me. And so that gave me some hope and motivation to really keep going with it. So I think that was sort of the start of really looking at everything in a different way.
Really interesting. I mean, so two things really strike me in what you're saying. The first is how, you describe your life as a horror. I mean, it was clearly, something was very out of sync for you at that point. And for illness to feel like a relief. It's not a nice place to be, right? You had no energy, you couldn't do anything. And yet that was a sufficient kind of, or it was a movement away from something that you were clearly really struggling with. So it shows you how bad it had got, right?
Yeah.
To feel like you were happy to be able to be in bed and be ill.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the other thing that strikes me in what you're talking about is that moment, which a lot of people talk about either being a moment or a kind of a more gradual process of recognizing that there could be another way. And again, you talk about the kind of strategy that you developed going to boarding school and suddenly having to cope and finding that, okay, right, I'm just going to be good, I'm going to be perfect, I'm going to get it right. Mm-hmm. And that will enable me to cope, to function in this world that you're thrown into. And you talk about that sensitivity. So again, we find these coping mechanisms, don't we? These ways of being in the world. And it often takes a real wake-up call for us to recognize that there could be a different way of functioning, a different way of seeing the world. So for you, so you talk about a kind of a different language. Can you tell me a little bit more about that for you? What was it about that language? You talk about choice and the idea of there being another way. But what kind of specifically do you think was the wake-up call or was different as you began to realize there was another way?
I think what I had done without realizing it was I had completely disconnected from who I really was. So when I went to boarding school, I couldn't be sensitive. I couldn't have these emotions because actually I was pretty unhappy and homesick. So I disconnected from that and chose to be quite tough and quite capable and quite strong and to achieve and succeed. And that became my identity. And so I had to keep doing that to feel okay. And I think what happened or started to happen as I worked through the course was I realized the pain of that disconnection, the pressure of that continual having to be this capable, strong person when actually that wasn't really me. So the first piece of it was realizing that you're holding all of that and you can let go. And it's just that concept of letting go of it, of all of it, is just massive. And I think then it was realizing that I was creating my own horror through that pressure. And so by gradually reconnecting, I was sort of coming back to something that felt better and gave me some more choices.
Interesting, again, that idea of what began as a coping mechanism that did work, right? It worked to a degree.
Yeah.
Becoming the root of horror, of you living a life that was genuinely so painful for you that you would rather be in bed unable to function. So really, really interesting. And I like what you're saying there in terms of how that became so much of an identity for you that you had to keep playing that out to feel okay. Mm. And really it was only at the point where everything fell apart that you began to question or had to question the identity that you'd created for yourselves and to realize it wasn't you. It wasn't actually terribly authentic to the person that you actually were. What was the process for you then of beginning to untangle some of that or unpick some of that?
Well, obviously, the tools that we learnt during the 90-day programme really helped. So having the awareness of what I was doing to myself was the first piece, because I'd had no idea how judgmental I was, how hard on myself I was. The kind of concept of self-compassion just didn't exist. So that was one big piece, I think, and it wasn't an overnight thing. I can't, even now, I'm not sure I can say when that happened. It almost just, you just get to a point and think, oh yes, it feels a bit better. And yeah, maybe I am sort of treating myself better. But that was definitely a big piece of it, is using the stop process on what I was doing to myself, that kind of voice in my head that was just telling me that if it wasn't perfect, I'd failed. So that was a very big piece. And I think another piece was working through one-to-one in the therapy sessions, just that understanding of how I'd got there and that ability to make it safe to reconnect to the emotions.
So absolutely, the awareness is the start point, isn't it? To even see that that is the case, that that's what we're doing, that that is the identity we've created and how we're doing it. And yes, what you say around kind of understanding how that has come to be, I think for a lot of people, we're not quite sure how we've got there. Even if we can see it, begin to see it, it doesn't necessarily make sense. So beginning to unpick or make sense of that world. And yes, finally, as you say, starting to make it safe to reconnect to our bodies, to our emotions. For a lot of people, that can feel quite scary, can't it? And yes. So for you, as you went through that process, we've talked a lot, I suppose, about your insights, about the fact that you realized that you'd created, you know, this identity for yourself, that that was disconnected from your authentic self. What kind of retrospectively, I guess, what were the other insights that you've gleaned through this process?
I think I realized somewhere during the illness that I didn't want to go back to that old life. I started to see that the illness was almost a gift, because it needed to come along. And if it hadn't come along, my life was, something else would have gone wrong. So it was that kind of realization that I'm meant to be on this journey. This is a journey I need to be taking. And I think that really helped, because it wasn't an easy journey. There were some bad moments in it, but it helped me to come out of those bad moments a bit quicker, because I knew that it was part of where I wanted to go. I wanted to create something new. I didn't want to go back to the old.
Really interesting. I think really important as well, the recognition. For some people who we see, there can be a kind of rose-tinted view of life before they got ill. And it's quite interesting that, of course, if life was that good, then we probably wouldn't, for the most part, I'm not saying this is always true, but for the most part, we probably wouldn't have got to that point of crashing, of becoming really ill. So there is something, I guess, about seeing it clearly, seeing the reality of what's been there for you. So interesting what you're saying. For you, there was an instant recognition that you didn't want that, and that was really helpful. And also that sense of it being a gift, there being a reason for it. Again, it's a very useful frame, isn't it, to have around what's going on, because it kind of makes sense of what's happening for you in some way, gives a reason or a purpose to what you're experiencing. Yeah. Because it means that you're going through it in order to move towards something,
yes,
which will be better, that will feel, yes, better.
Yes, so I think it gave me that hope which wasn't there all the time, because there obviously are always tough times that you're going through, but it would come back and I would remember it, and it would help me take that next step.
What were the tough times? I'm just thinking about people watching this and listening to this, and who might need that comfort that you know, those tough times are normal. For you, what were the tough times?
So it's always tough when you go backwards. And I think, you know, it's very common through the condition of chronic fatigue. It's not a straight line. So I would feel like I was doing well, and then for whatever reason, there'd be 2 weeks where you're back in bed. And I think that is always really tough, because your mind immediately wants to say, oh my God, what if I've gone back to the beginning and I've got another year to get back to where I was? So tough times just kind of physically is when the health didn't feel like it was going in the right direction. It was that fear around what that meant, and being able to just kind of rest and believe, I haven't gone back to the beginning, this is okay. But I think each time that happens, there was a part of me that went, I can't do this again, not again. So that I remember that as being quite tough, is sort of, how do you get out of that when it happens?
Again, such a common theme, you know, when people get the cold, you know, or have some kind of bug, that kind of absolute fear that takes over of, oh no, I'm back where I started. And then kind of to normalize, actually, people get bugs, people get colds, even people who are very well, you know, get bugs and colds. It doesn't mean I'm going back. But yes, absolutely. And for you, what was it, do you think, that eventually, maybe not at the time in that moment, kind of initially, but what was it that helped you most to reframe that, or to make sense of that? Because you're right, those moments where you kind of go backwards can be real, real kind of crucial points for people. Because if you do spiral into the fear, into the anxiety, it can essentially lengthen that process. It can lead to a bit more of a dip than maybe that needed to be. So for you, I'm interested, what was it that made the difference, or what was it that helped most in those moments?
I think I didn't do, I was going to say perfectly, but I don't want to use that word now. But, you know, there were times where I was in it. So there might be a day or two or a week. But I think it was knowing and trusting that I had the tools, I'd done it before, and I did believe that I was going, that I could do it. I believed I was going to get better. I believed in the process or the journey that I was on. So I was fascinated in all the psychology tools, which is why I went on and trained in it. So that helped, because I it all made sense to me. So I could remember, okay, you know, something in my mind would go, you need to do your stop process, or you're catastrophizing this, or you know, you're giving yourself a hard time. So something would kind of come in to remember, actually, I don't need to panic about this. I can pick myself back up and create that belief and hope again, and then do something to take that step out of it. And of course, each time it didn't last so long. So then you have the evidence from the previous one to say, I know if I do this, it'll be okay in a week or a few days or something. So yeah.
Really interesting. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of recommitting, isn't it? You have those moments, as you say, I think that's so normal. You have those moments where you're really in it, and you just, you know, it's the end of the world. But then kind of remembering, recommitting, re-engaging with everything that you've learnt. And I always like that Einstein quote, you know, a mind once expanded can never go back to its original form. Once you have those tools in your mind, once you've got some experience of being able to create some change, that just kind of triggers somewhere, reminds you to re-engage with it. And as you said, the more that you've done that, when you've had a few experiences of coming through it, it begins to give you the evidence, the hope. You can go back and go, okay, hang on, this happened before and I managed to come through it and it was okay, it worked.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Really interesting.
And I think that piece of fear is such an interesting piece because it kind of comes up in subtle ways and in layers. And for me, I was really quite shocked a few years after I thought I'd recovered, found myself on holiday going to bed the night before we were about to climb Snowdon. And it hit me and out of nowhere, and I thought I was recovered. And it was that last piece of fear that was left in my mind saying, what if you walk all the way up to the top and then that you hit that wall, you know, because you don't forget that, and there's no way back, you've got to walk all the way back down. And I felt it in that moment, and I had to use those tools. Even then, took me an hour or so to calm down, but I knew I could do it. And I got up the next morning and I did it, and I felt very liberated because I felt like sometimes these little last pieces linger and they come back and surprise you, and they're just a piece of that fear that has stayed, that memory that stayed there.
The experience can be quite traumatic, can't it? I mean, let's face it, the experience of suddenly not being able to walk down the street or pick up your own children or get back to the car, you know, it isn't something, as you say, that is easily forgotten. And so it makes perfect sense that little echo, even all that time later, after all the recovery work you'd done and how far you'd come. Yeah, absolutely. I always say to people, whatever's gone on before, you know, the experience of going through this can be traumatic in itself, and that needs working through. There's also a kind of grieving process for it, right? To some degree, that has to happen as we recover as well.
Yes.
What else for you? I know you've talked to me before also about that sense of isolation in it. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because I get something else that I think people will really resonate with.
Yes. Yes, I think probably along with the fear, the other bit that I struggled with the most was that feeling of isolation on a number of levels. So it was feeling as though there wasn't anybody else who could understand what it was feeling like. So they weren't on my wavelength. And even, you know, my husband or my mother, people who were quite close to me, they just couldn't say the right thing. You just can't get someone to understand what that fatigue feels like. And that's very isolating because there's no one really hearing you and validating what you're going through. And I think in terms of friends with chronic fatigue, you often look okay. So I could get to school and I could kind of climb out the car and wait for my children. And so people didn't necessarily give you the support that you were crying out for. And I didn't feel comfortable asking for help. And I remember very clearly, actually, a session I had with you, and I was saying, I feel sorry for myself. No one, you know, no one's helping me. And I remember you saying, well, do you think that you give out, you know, do you ask for help? Do you give out vibes that you want help? Do people know you want help? And that really resonated with me because I hadn't realized that I probably appeared still quite strong and capable. So people didn't know what I was going through or what I needed. So I think that isolation was just it feeling like that support wasn't there. And it was partly coming from me not asking for it. And it's partly just that the world doesn't know what you're going through. And yeah, I really struggled with that. And funnily enough, struggled with it almost more when I was kind of coming out the other end. And I remember going to a friend's birthday lunch and just sitting there feeling as though I'd just come back from another planet, and I just could not connect with these people and what they were talking about or what was important to them. And I felt this desperate isolation then because I thought I was better and I thought everything would be fine. And I walked back to my car and burst into tears and just thought, why have I come through this really hard time just to feel like this? And that was another piece of that real feeling of isolation.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, that integration phase can be a really challenging one, actually, to some degree, almost, you know, the most challenging for some people, because as you say, you know, you've gone through this journey, and the only way I can liken, or the only thing I can liken it to really, and I think we've had this conversation before, it's a bit like coming back from a war zone, world that has not shared that with you. And you've been through this amazingly challenging, but also life-changing experience, and everything else around hasn't kind of followed or caught up. And it can feel like a real disconnect. And yeah, I think coming into the reintegration phase as well, because you've worked so hard to get there, you kind of, as you say, feel like, well, you should be done now. This should just all be great. But actually there's more to do. There's a new world and life and how you are in that world to develop and to create, I guess, for some people. And that in itself has its own challenges as well. So I think that's a really important point as well. So bring us up to date. You go through the training course, you obviously, you know, gradually get to stronger and stronger, and not an easy road for you, I know, but one that you persevered with and got to full recovery. So what does life look like for you today?
So yes, very different, thank goodness. So I've obviously changed career from being a lawyer to being a therapeutic coach. And I feel energized, I feel balanced, I'm doing something I love doing. I'm passionate about health and well-being. I love my job. I love connecting with people, which as a lawyer, it wasn't really about that. And I think I have a much better relationship with myself. And I think that's been a really key piece as well. And being very kind of understanding that life's not meant to look great all the time, but it's okay. You know, it's knowing that as a human, we have bad days and that's okay. But just having that sense that I know where I'm going and I know who I am, and it just all feels much more aligned. And I make different choices now and make choices to create that balance for myself so that I'm never going to get back to that kind of place I came from. And so it feels completely different and fantastic.
Really lovely to hear, obviously. I think what you say there about alignment, you know, if we are disconnected, if we don't know ourselves, or we've created an identity for ourselves in order to cope with the world, then actually the end point of that is never going to end up with us feeling aligned and connected and meeting our own needs really and having our values met, right? So it's never going to go well, really, ultimately, is it? So I like what you're saying there about coming back to, you know, all the work you've done is to come back to a sense of your authentic self.
Yes.
And then you can make choices from there. You can find a career that fits that. You can find lifestyle or friendship or whatever choices to be in line with that. And then that feels better. As you say, it's not like life is then perfect and there are no challenges in our worlds, but that you're living from a place that feels more connected, more authentic, more aligned with you. And then the choices feel better. The path feels better.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
And I think that word balance is, it, for me, really, really resonates, because I don't get that right all the time, but I recognize when I go out of balance, okay, this is what I need. So I've got those checkpoints and those things I can put in place when I realize that balance isn't there. And actually, if we are in balance, then everything just seems to flow a lot better.
And it strikes me there are two things there. The first is the awareness that you're out of balance, right? That there's a gauge. You've got a benchmark for what imbalance feels like, and therefore you are more aware when you're out of balance. That's really important, isn't it? And also that piece that you talk about there in terms of, well, you know what to do. You have a toolkit of how to get back into balance. And it strikes me that both of those were things that would probably have been absent in your old, you know, version of you, your old identity. There wasn't necessarily a sense of what balanced felt like, of what it felt to feel good, to feel aligned, to feel in balance with yourself. And you didn't necessarily have the tools or understanding or knowledge to know how to recalibrate that as well. So,
and I think the other thing that strikes me talking about this is also that word control, because that was the piece, I think, when I was out of control, you try and grab it and control more and more and more. And actually, a big piece of getting that balance and being more aligned is knowing how and when to let go. Particularly when you've got children and, you know, you could worry about everything and, you know, it's learning how to have that kind of relationship to all that stuff and those people around you that feels kind of, balanced, so that you don't over worry and you don't over parent and you don't, you know. So I think there is that whole understanding of being able to let go a bit more, which has really helped me as well.
It's not a word you've used, but what strikes me in what you're saying is that in order for that to be true, I guess there has to be a sense of trust or a sense of safety, kind of something to let go into, right? And that very often, if, and I think back to you as that sort of young girl at boarding school, probably thrown into something that felt very overwhelming for you and very, I guess, unsafe at some level. And therefore, I guess it's finding a new way, isn't it? Of saying, actually, it's all right. It's all right to let go. It's okay to see what happens and to trust that that's going to be okay.
Yeah, and I think it actually goes back to what I was saying before, which is that relationship to self. Because I think the difference is that through this journey, one of the key things is building up trust in yourself. Trust that you can deal with difficult emotion. Trust that you can deal with a situation and that you will be okay. And as soon as you can have that trust, which also involves obviously connecting, then it's easier to kind of to let go a bit.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, absolutely. And I can see, of course, how and why you're doing so brilliantly in your own practice. In fact, we are bringing Natasha in as one of our coaches in the therapeutic coaching course now, because obviously she's got such great experience both from herself and all the work that you've done. So it's lovely to talk to you about this all these years later and for you to share your wisdom, you know, in hindsight and I guess in retrospect of the journey that you went through. It's interesting, isn't it, how as you move away from it, how it gets clearer and clearer and kind of your perspective around it becomes even more in focus, I think. Is that your experience of it too?
Yes, I think that's right. It's sort of, and I think that is part of the ongoing journey of life, is you start seeing more and more of the layers and everything more clearly. And in a way, it doesn't stop here. I think, you know, I'm still on a journey and there's still loads I can be doing. I have a much clearer picture of where I'm going and what I want and sort of where I've come from.
I really like that too, because I think it's something that people say quite often is, okay, so, you know, once you're recovered, like, that's done, right? I don't have to worry about any of this anymore. And I know you'll probably be having those conversations with clients as well, but you kind of go, well, it's not exactly true. There is this ongoing process, isn't there, of self-awareness, of self-development, of continuing to tune in. It's not like we kind of get better and drop all of that. It becomes part of how we operate in the world. That is a really important piece to be aware of as well, whether or not people always want to hear that exactly. So thank you so much for sharing your journey, your story with us. Really appreciate it. And I know there's some really important themes that people will really be resonating with out there. So I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
And thanks everyone for watching and listening.